Ruth Drinker and Mary Eaton are being interviewed by Renee Garalick for Concord's Oral History Program. The interview is taking place on April 10th, 2003 at Mary Eaton's home at 280 Estabrook Road. You both bring a wonderful and long perspective of time to Concord. Let's begin with you, Ruth. The year you were born and where you grew up.
I was born in 1914, excuse me, in the upstairs master bedroom of a little road house on Sudbury Road. And lived there for 10 years. Then we moved to a house on what is now Simon Miller Road, overlooking the meadows down to the river. And it had been the home of General Darling, his family was Concord, way back, remember? Elizabeth.
Oh, yes,
yes, yes, I do.
It had a tennis court, mostly different, but it had a tennis court. In those days, that was amazing. And when my parents decided to have a garden out back, they ran into the foundations of Simon Willard's farm. And my mother incorporated that into the garden. Lovely. So I spent the rest of my life in Concord there.
And your maiden name?
Brooks.
Your relationship to other Brooks?
Well, Dad had a brother, Edwin Brooks, who was also in real estate in Boston. And he had a son, Edwin Brooks, who lived out, excuse me, on Garfield Road. He was there for a long time. And Betty, his sister, lived quite a long time in Concord, and she married James Ford, and they bought a small spot on Spencerbrook Road, and so they lived there for a long time.
What was your father's name?
My father was Arthur.
And his profession was real estate.
Yes, Boston and Concord, until the Boston part got so big and the Concord part also grew, and he couldn't do both. So he turned the Concord part over to Mrs. David Baldwin, Beth Baldwin, whose husband was a master in Middlesex. And that was very happy. He did very well, enjoyed each other, so the way that went.
Am I right that back in those days there was one real estate agent and then they passed it on to somebody else? Now we've got about 29, right?
Exactly.
Certainly there were far fewer. And your mother's name?
Mother was Ruth Faxon, F-A-X-O-N, came from Brookline, and they were married in 1911, saved up their pennies until they could have a family, and settled in Concord. Very modest little house with no cellar under the kitchen. Some of it cooked in heavy boots all winter. And she told me, I never saw it, but she told me that on the worst nights, worst days, the tea kettle would boil over and freeze on the floor.
Oh my days. Didn't you have any heat in your house?
Yes, but it didn't reach the kitchen floor.
Oh.
No underpinnings.
Did the Brooks name have anything to do with the Brooks School?
Oh yes. My aunt, Uncle Ned's wife, was a trained teacher, and she met the need for three or four small children who needed special training. Special education, and there wasn't anything available to the public system at all. So she started her own little school in the basement often flooded, of the house just east, I guess you'd call it, of the bridge on Lowell Road. It was occupied by Mr. and Mrs. Swaim and their family, and underneath the main part of the house was quite a big finished basement. So my Gladys took that out.
So what house was this?
The Swaim's house.
Well, I think of the Swaim's as being on Monument Street.
But
oh, I thought you said Lowell Road.
Oh, maybe I did.
So Mrs. the Brook School started in the basement of the Swaim's house?
Yep. And was often flooded.
My brother went to that school.
Did you go there?
No. No, I didn't. It moved to the bungalow. Corner of Lang Street, isn't the bungalow?
Yeah, it's not right on the corner, but it's the
next one.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I bought that and moved down there, Kit and Caboodle, and had her really beginnings of the school. And then they outgrew that property because it was a very popular institution. And they bought up Wood Street, Wood and Elm, the Sawyer Place on Wood.
Did Concord Academy have its own origins, or was it connected in any way with the Brook School?
Concord Academy was a Montessori effort.
Okay.
And it was on Belmont Street.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Dudley was one of the teachers. She may have been the teacher. And that's where I went. And then that moved over, was incorporated in the beginnings of Concord Academy.
There were Concord Academies way back in the, well, the 19th century, I suppose. There was school, there was one over on Middle Street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then
the Thoreau Brothers.
That's
there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so anyway.
Well, let's catch up a bit with you. Mary, the year you were born and where?
No. I was born in 1922, and I was born in Boston, and my family lived in Cambridge, and we moved out in, well, I suppose I was something, must have been 20, well, I first went to Concord Academy in 27. But anyway, we moved out to Concord when I was like 3 or something, and moved to that first house, and then...
The Lee House.
The Lee House, right. And it was in 1928 that my family bought what is now the Lane House, where they stayed until my mother died, and we sold it to Concord family, which was the right thing to do. It obviously was the only house on the street that didn't belong to Concord family.
So actually, both the Lee House and
Aloyan
House both became Concord Academy House.
That's correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you you were destined.
I was just stayed there, yeah, right.
And your parents' name?
And my parents were Julia and Frederick Gooding. And my father came from Portsmouth and my mother came from St. Louis. And the St. Louis people used to spend their summers in New Hampshire, and so that's where my father and mother met up. And I guess when they were married, they first bought this little house in Cambridge, where they didn't stay for very long.
And you have some of your early memories written?
Well, do you want me to read
sure.
this?
Or, yeah, or talk it.
Or talk it, or...
Go ahead.
I can read it.
Sure.
I grew up on Main Street in two houses that are now part of Concord Academy. Of course, we've just done that. First in the house, in the house that is now is Lee House, and then in 28 we moved to what is now Aloyan House. My father was Frederick Gooding, and he worked in advertising in Boston at the old Boston Herald. My life during my growing up centered on Concord Academy, which over the years grew up around our house. And I went there from kindergarten through 12th grade, And when I first went there, there were boys there in the very early years, but they departed. And what I didn't, I meant to look up, which I could have done, to say when boys came a main part of the school, fairly recently.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was only girls when I was there. I remember, oh, where am I? I made good friends there, and many of them are still my best friends. Miss Hobson was the first headmistress, and was so until, I think, 1940. She terrified us all, right?
Yeah.
I remember going downtown after school with my friends to the soda fountain at Richardson's drugstore. Other things I remember, the dancing classes at the Scout House run by Freddie Childs. Remember that?
Yeah, sure.
And the iceman who brought ice to our back door and put it directly into the ice chest. Several big markets downtown, besides Anderson's and A&P and the First National. You can't get anything downtown now, right? There was a wonderful fruit store. Remember the fruit store? Run by Jimmy and Adam. And it was just a madness. I remember skating across the river and back of my house over to the Flooded Meadows, where we all skated. There were automobile agencies right in the middle of town. Muddy and Tyrrell, about where Anderson's photo is now, and the Middlesex Motors, where Tuttle's livery is. The Camoa property on Main Street in West Concord is now Concord Green. I remember that my parents led a very gay social life. We're not supposed to be gay anymore, are we?
No.
Lots of dinner parties. In World War II, I worked in Boston for the head of the British Naval Mission that came to Boston to supply troops for the ships we were building for Lend-Lease. It was a very exciting job and made rationing seem like no hardship. I remember two small stores in downtown Concord. These have been mentioned. Miss Buck, who sold all manner of notions, and Miss Houghton, where my first long evening dress came from. Concord was much more of a small town then. If you didn't actually know everyone, you knew who they were. And in the early days, I remember an elderly lady, ramrod straight, driving her electric car down Main Street. In those days, the Concord Independent Battery shot their dawn salute from the Shattuck Hill, and I remember being awakened at dawn, indeed, to hear the horses pulling the town down Main Street. I remember my mother calling Anderson's Market in the morning and having the groceries delivered. Wouldn't that be nice? The Chinese Laundry has been mentioned. Arkin Brothers, the Taylors. And Sunday evenings to the movies in Maynard. We always sat in the balcony where all of our friends sat and everybody went. And that's the end of my speech.
There were two Arkin brothers.
Yes, there were.
Sam and Matt.
That's yes, right. That's right.
And his wife was a milliner.
Was a what?
Milliner. She made hats.
I don't remember having hats. I remember the little hat shop over on Bow Street. You remember that lady who had hats?
Yep, I do.
Nobody wears hats anymore.
And actually, Sam's son, Nat, called me the other day. He's coming back for his 60th. High school reunion, and is helping to organize it. So,
that's great.
Yeah.
Great.
So they felt very attached.
They've still
to Concord.
Their Concord roots.
Yeah.
Going.
Yeah. Yeah. That was very nice to hear. Ruth, what do you remember about Concord Academy?
Being scared of Miss Hobson.
I was terrified of Miss Hobson and the green chair in the office where we had to go. I remember the uniforms that we had to use.
Gracious, we didn't have uniforms.
Oh, we had blues and the red team and the
we had them for sports.
That's what I mean.
Oh yeah. But we didn't have a school uniform.
The only uniforms that I encountered other than sports was the fact that my mother loved to sew, and I had a long 1 hour. I mean, when I walked to school, my mother always made me wear tweed bloomers. big voluminous tweed blues over my regular school clothes. But as I got to the Shoreditch Hill Bridge, I took the bloomers off and hid them under the bridge. Had to put them on again on the way home.
Was this for warmth?
For warmth, or not. Mm-hmm. I was very unsociable.
That reminds me of a story in my children's generation. My sons went to the sociables at the country club, dances, and one of my sons appeared to go to be picked up to go to a sociable one night, and he had on loafers, and I said, "You don't go to a dance in loafers. You put your shoes on," which he did. Well, it was many, many years later that I found out that he'd thrown the shoes out the window and taken the loafers. It's a lot interesting, the things one finds out many years later.
So they had young sociable for young people.
Yes,
oh, yes,
yes.
The ones who in our era were in what is now the selectman's office on the second floor of the townhouse. Middlesex was imported from Middlesex Wars came down. There were no girls there then. And there was a good deal of discomfort because we were in separate unisex schools and we didn't have many social graces. Some of the Concord Academy girls from New York were more adept at that than we, country bumpkins. Anyway, I can remember sitting along the wall. I was square. I was just as wide as I was tall. And so, knowing what a wallflower was part of my growing up.
Well, you certainly...
she grew out of it,
that,
didn't she?
But what you're saying is that the private school system really has strong roots in Concord.
Oh, indeed.
Strong legacy.
It does indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Way back with Thoreau.
Really?
I'm
I don't, I'm not aware of private school in Thoreau's day. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, his contemporaries, Judge Hoare and it's all in the Concord Academy book. They banded together and built the first Concord Academy, not the one we know today.
Yes, I that
the
I
one
do
on,
know.
On
yeah.
Middle Street.
Right.
So that also was
yes, you
symbol
are yeah.
The private.
Mm-hmm. You obviously felt a strong attachment to Concord Academy, both of you, because as the years went by, you devoted a lot of time to it.
Yeah, right. You asked somewhere along the line, in that thing somewhere, of you are saying something about how we came to write this?
Yes, and that thing is a very nice book called Concord Academy Houses.
Well,
so
was,
tell us.
It was a situation where Ruth and I had both grown up in Concord and gone to Concord Academy. But we were quite aware of the fact that, as Concordians, we knew about all those houses, but that the girls who came from other parts of the world, or the country, I guess, didn't know. We thought that they should know this, and that's why we got together to, you know, get the history of the houses and the people who lived in them. And so the people who went to the school knew what that was all about.
Well, the very house that you had grown up in had very distinguished people
oh,
had
yes,
lived there.
Yes.
You want to name some of them?
Oh, well, I can't think of
the John Thoreau
the Thoreaus, I know. And I wanted to say something in that book, and I was told I couldn't, about the fact that the Thoreaus, they never had any money and they lived practically everywhere in town.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived in that house maybe only one year.
Mm-hmm.
Then they moved across the street to the one that's now called Monroe House. And I can't think of it.
Lemuel Shattuck.
Yes,
you know,
he did.
Historian.
If you want to know who the famous people were,
it's all
we'll
in
have to
here.
Look the book
yeah,
up.
No, it's a great contribution.
It was a nice thing, you know. Tom Wilcox, who was the director or whatever at that time, announced. I don't know if it's been continued, but that he was going to see that every board of the 10 years of the school had a copy of that, only so they knew what it was all about.
Absolutely. At the very end of the book, Mary, there is a wonderful picture of you and Ruth sitting on the steps of Concord Academy like two schoolgirls sitting in front of the house that you grew up in. So now you have given people part of the legacy that they could refer to.
Because one of the reasons that we started this thing, Mary, was that a change in administration had decided to give the name, take the name of
yes.
the original.
That's something that upset us.
Yeah. The Board of Trustees changed the name of Tucker House, which is the name for a former headmistress, and gave the name of one of the big donors to the school, and we were incensed that it should be changed.
Our little committee of archives that we were on
really
got undone, and we went to the top. I mean, we had all sorts of meetings and all sorts of people listening to us harangue, but we didn't win.
We didn't win. But I think in the long run, we probably did, because the book.
Yes, and also that I think that they were aware that this was not the sort of integrity that we wished to pass on to the next people that were coming there, that they could change the name if they got some money.
You know, it's almost the reverse. Had this existed, they may have not done that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you did that as a result of something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of the things that got us going, yeah. And they, you said something that made me think of something I was going to say, but I can't remember.
One aspect of life during certainly the pre-World War II era, there were many service-related jobs that helped family life.
Oh, you bet.
And why don't we talk about them? Cooks and gardeners. And
well, we lived very simply, but we always had a mother's helper, they called it. And the sources in our life were Maynard. Maynard was a mill town, and there were lots of mill women who wanted extra jobs. And I can remember a series of them. I still have recipes from Gertrude and so forth. And
they had a Gertrude.
They're part of our family. Our Gertrude was just as good the social secretary for my life as it expanded as she was a cook, but she was a very good cook. And they didn't hesitate to do anything else. I mean, it wasn't, I'm just to cook, or I wouldn't touch anything. It was none of that. They were mother's helpers, which I think
yeah, we
important.
Always had somebody that was full-time, did everything. And do you know that my mother wrote a cookbook that was published in 1940?
Oh.
Yeah.
Formal dinners, it was.
Formal dinners, yes. She was always upset about that because the first chapter was entitled Formal Dinners, and she really didn't think that was a good way to sell a cookbook. Not many people were giving formal dinners in 1940.
But the fact that they were before that,
yes, true.
That was part of entertaining,
true.
And not really so today.
Yeah.
I know when we had an earlier conversation, you mentioned, Ruth, that every family had their Tonys gardeners.
That was another ethnic enclave. The Italians, of course, behind the depot. And they provided gardening help for, well, anybody that could afford it, and they weren't very expensive. And they really took care of the places, but not on a contract kind of basis. Your mother was a gardener, my mother was a gardener, and these men were assistants.
It's funny, it's one thing that I can't remember, because I'm talking about your Tony, and my mother was a tremendous gardener. It was her life. Well, she did. But I'm sure she didn't mow the lawn, but I don't remember any one mowing the lawn.
Oh,
my father went once a year out to the garden. I mean, he was...
He used a term, an accommodator.
Yes. The accommodators, I think, were the ladies that came in if you were having a party. My mother was having a large party, and the accommodator would come in and accommodate. You know, help put the party on.
But not much cooking. It was more the serving and the setting the table, clearing up the ashtrays from the living room.
Thank God we don't have to do that anymore.
But there were people oftentimes who helped with the laundry, domestic help.
I think we both talked about laundresses over on behind the depot. My mother used to take the laundry.
My mother took the laundry always to Mrs. DeChico.
Mrs. DeChico, maybe that's... I don't think DeChico was who we went to, but never mind. My mother didn't do the laundry.
Was that Elaine DeChico's grandmother?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Elaine DeChico, being the former high school principal. There were so many activities that you had done. It was, whether it was skating, did you want to talk about that?
Well, I can talk about the outdoor kind of thing, which my father and mother were both interested in the outdoors, and they brought Peter and me up to love the outdoors, and we started on Fred Eaton. Little tiny hill next to where we lived on the Scarecrow Road, and took Mother's best tray.
And was there a little hill out back towards the river?
Yeah, a little bit of a hill. And we would take Mother's best trays and go, the minute there was a crust, heaven, get on the trays and skid down. And then that, we grew out of that and went over to the shorter hill where the Shaw family allowed the town to use it. The skis, the toboggans.
They built a couple of jumps.
Oh, we built jumps. First by snow and then added wood. And then cross country came and we all used Estabrook Woods. A lot of us did the cross country skiing, which was interesting. Difficult in those days, wide boards and fences across that you had to cross and snag your pants on the barbed wire. It was fun. And the river, there were lots of ponds. Water pond increased until the very end because it was so deep. But there were lots of other ponds. Peanut McCone's Pond and Lowell Road. And
I think we missed Peanut McCone plowing that pond.
Oh,
I think of it every winter, and nobody skates there anymore.
I know.
It's
too bad.
Yeah. But the river was tricky, and my father and Jim Carson and Dick Eaton were a few of the people that really knew how to read ice.
And how to what ice?
How to read.
Oh, read ice.
By the sound. And they always had a hockey stick, and they'd go ahead, and the echo would tell him about the debt. Dad always had ropes around his waist in case anybody hit a soft spot and went down. He had skates that turned up at the end, like Hans Trinket. I still have them, and I cannot get them to the museum.
Did your family have a woodlot?
Oh, yes.
Yes, because the Eatons did, too.
Yes.
You tell her about the woodlots.
They were all, excuse me, about three or four families bought the property around Goose Pond. You know what that is?
Near Lincoln.
Morgan.
Oh, okay.
And they bought it for the wood. But it also, they put up a cabin. Dick had a cabin on the point.
Yeah, and there was water. I remember going skating over there.
Oh, the pond. Goose Pond. Yeah.
Goose Pond, of course.
Yeah, we skated. You bet. And we had almost every weekend during the winter, we had cookouts there. All fried. And that was fun. I had scars of 52 stitches in my leg from one of the coasting accidents over there.
Now, where were you coasting over there? I don't
know where Hetty Kent now lives, the old Root Farm.
Yeah.
All right. And back in between the Root Farm and Goose Farm.
Oh, and there was no Route 2.
No.
Yeah, right.
No,
I got it.
So that was a real social occasion. All ages.
Memorial Day. Well, I'm not going to really contribute anything to this. As a child, I can remember walking across the street by the library and watching the parade come down Stowe Street and go down Main Street, but I think that's all I saw. I don't really... they must have gone to the cemeteries.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Remember I don't remember... I was a scout, but I don't remember marching to the cemeteries. So.
Well, they finally decided, I think, that the Catholic cemetery was too far away. And it meant such a hiatus for the observers when the parade had gone all the way down to Bedford. Then the people that had staked out places to sit and watch, to stand and watch, had a long wait before the parade came back again.
Well, they've changed that now in the fact that they start out there.
They start in the Catholic Cemetery?
They start on what's called Ash Street, which is beyond the Concord Cemetery.
Yeah.
And so they don't do two routes anymore.
Soft piece. We spent a lot of time before Memorial Day accepting and almost stealing lilacs from everybody's yard because they would make nice reeds, and we built reeds and put them on long poles, and some of us had to carry the poles, and then we'd start and put where we were told to put a reed on the lips. Great. It was hard work.
Do you remember stealing lilacs for May Day at Concord Academy?
Certainly do.
We danced the maypole, and we had a May Queen, and the lilacs were a big deal.
Oh, you bet they were.
But part of the parade were the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts.
Yes, right.
And those groups were bigger groups then.
Oh, yes, I think they definitely were.
Oh, yes. With brownies all the way up.
But we didn't have any Minutemen. Oh, you're talking about Memorial Day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We had flags and we had the bunting, just the way it is today.
Yes, right.
Flags in the veterans' graves, and nobody stole them in those days.
Oh, do they steal them today?
I think it's been known.
Well, I don't know. They haven't gone from our graves anyway.
Your husband John grew up in Concord.
Yes, he did. Yeah, actually, he was. Well, he's not so proud of it anymore because he was third generation, and his grandfather was superintendent of schools, William Lorenzo Eaton. And there were two William Lorenzo Eatons. there was another one that came earlier. And I can't remember what he was famous for. But anyway, John Lewis.
Because he certainly, through the Independent Battery,
yes,
you know, marched in,
yeah,
oh, many,
yes,
Memorial,
yes,
Day parade.
He did, and then after that, after the war, he did more marching with the veterans than with the Battery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was president of the Battery, and his son is now, which is sort of nice.
The community pulled together during World War II. It was a very unifying element.
And you know, you asked about if there were any old pictures. And I did pick up some old pictures, but I was showing them to Leslie and she said, they don't care about those. There were pictures of a group of men, and I think your father was one of them, and my father was one, rolling bandages.
Oh,
really?
In World War II.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
My mother was sort of head of a Red Cross bandage rolling with Mrs. Eaton.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh dear. All right, I'm not going to run and find it now.
Right,
I did take in a few pictures to show Leslie.
Well, I'll look at it.
I'm going to write that down and I'll... And I can't remember what else I got. I got a picture of me at the age of about 4 or something, out in front of Lee House on my scooter or something.
Great, because
okay,
we have very few pictures of the town during World War II. Almost nothing, you know, when I was going through to do an exhibit. But you remember your family's planting victory gardens?
Oh, yes. Oh, my mother's garden was all vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were given to her by John Eaton. I mean, I ended up marrying the next John. Our families were good friends, but I never really... John was that much older than I growing up, but I never really knew him. I just worshipped him from afar.
Uh-huh. He later became state representative?
That's correct. Yeah, I guess I wrote that down somewhere. 65
I think, to 67.
55 to something, and 55 to 67. And
oh, 55 to 67. Wow. That's a long period of time.
It was. And he finally quit.
And then he became?
A judge in 72.
Of the Concord District
Court.
Concord was a very Republican town.
It certainly was. That's why he was a rep for so long, because he never had any competition.
Concord was sort of split. West Concord tended to be more Democratic than Republican.
True. But Concord is pretty much all Democratic today, isn't it?
I would say independent.
Well,
the largest category today. In terms of divisions, there was the geographical separatism.
Yes.
Despite separation.
The fact that they've tried to change it, it's still, although it has the same zip code, they still are a separate, I think people think of them in terms of a separate town. There's a sign up on Main Street at the junction of Main Street and what is it? Thurrock. And it points to West Concord there and Concord there.
But I mean, when it had two separate zip codes,
yes,
that really,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think it was, you know, quite exaggerated during your time.
That's right. That's right. You're right.
It was a great deal of feeling. A great deal of feeling. I think Concord was very snobbish. Because you got caught in the middle. Because the feeling between Concord and West Concord was around religion, a lot of it. And West Concord tended to be mostly Catholic. And Concord was not mostly Catholic. And there was quite a feeling.
I don't feel that way. I don't agree with you.
Well, you were in the middle of it, you see.
Because you were Catholic.
I was Catholic, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I have said this before, that I went to Concord Academy. I was the only Catholic in the school.
Really?
Never,
really?
Ever, and my sister, never, ever had a feeling that I was not as good as the next guy.
Oh, it wasn't that kind of... How can I explain it? It was, in those days you would have called it, the West Concord group was sort of a
class difference.
Class difference, that's the mm-hmm.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree with that, mm-hmm. really.
And
more
then,
than religious.
Just by bit, we got...
We had a bigger church in Concord than in West Concord. We must have had plenty of Catholics down here.
And we had the first West Concord selectman was a big thing. It really broke some of the log jams. I can't remember who it was.
Was that Archie Farron? Or
I think it was before Archie.
Oh, Archie,
but I may
okay.
be wrong. Mm-hmm. Archie was a very respected mm-hmm. person in both towns.
No, I think the class difference is you know,
yeah.
where it separated. And I think you do have a certain immigrant assimilation,
yeah.
you
That's
know,
true.
For the
That's
first
true.
Half of the
and
were
all
century.
Those immigrants Catholics, the Italians were, but not necessarily.
The Polish were not.
What?
The Polish were not. Yeah. And we had a good supply of Polish immigrants.
And, you know, still the Irish assimilation.
Do you remember so Leif Nash? And
oh,
yeah.
Yeah, and he was another person that I remember very well. As a matter of fact, John and I got engaged over his bar.
Oh! His bar. Where was his bar?
In his, it was in his factory, if you will, in West
Dover
Hunter.
Ski Binding.
Dover Ski Binding, yeah.
Oh, right. He had a bar there.
He had a, he lived there, and he had a, yeah, he did have a bar. And John was a very good friend of Leif's, and we used to go up there, sort of, after parties, and hang out over the bar.
Oh, I was told he was an excellent skier.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
In terms of the life of the Mildam, there was a vibrancy of the commercial downtown.
Yeah.
Some of you even remember before people had private telephones.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think that the, what was the word you just used? A vibrancy and I think the downtown Concord has changed tremendously. And it isn't Concordians who own, like the Vanderbilts still
mm-hmm.
have
the families.
They're only, there aren't Concordians, you think, owning all these little stores downtown.
No, there aren't. I think one of you remembered, you know, the woman at the phone exchange Snow Pharmacy.
See, nobody ever, we didn't have, you're talking about your mother going out for dinner and
yes.
telling them where she was.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, if you were expecting, you had one telephone in the house, and if you were expecting, excuse me, a call, how important, I mean, Dad's business was Boston, and often he was expecting call, and you just call the exchange downtown and say, if a call comes in, we will be at so-and-so for dinner. Well, she can pretty much
call. We didn't have our little answering machines.
Though. Yeah, I would say, that was before the answering mm-hmm. machine.
Yes.
So the basics were found downtown.
Yes, yes.
Almost like a self-contained community.
Well, I'm trying to think, it's just like my mention earlier that you can't get a bottle of milk downtown, and when we were kids there were several big grocery stores, and well, the A&P and the First National weren't owned by Concordians, but you know, Miss Buck and Miss Houghton and
you mentioned Maris.
The Maris and the Andersons
Piers.
And
Yeah, that's certainly, you didn't have the malls and...
That has changed, no question. And
I think the whole idea of being able to have things delivered gave it a very personalized
touch. That was very true. And yet, I have this feeling today that I wouldn't consider calling up and ordering my groceries. I'd have to go and get the right melon or make sure the meat looked right or whatever.
Yeah.
But
I can't even send my husband to do it.
Pardon me?
I can't even send my husband to do it because he's not,
mine's
not very good at picking up fresh vegetables.
What a profession was Henry in?
He's an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And then became executive. But he commuted from Concord to Foxborough for 27 years.
Mm-hmm.
Where there was no 128 and it was a hazardous trip. But I had a job here and we didn't want to get tied up with the small manufacturing town of Foxborough.
Mm-hmm.
Cocktail parties and the bridge games.
You got away from cocktail parties? Bridge games in Concord, come on.
I know that, but not with the same people all the time.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
You know,
I'm ingrown down there.
We talked about education, and I just always remember you as being very devoted to adult education.
Mm-hmm.
You served on the advisory board for a number of years.
And so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She did a lot of worthy things that I couldn't possibly approach.
Don't be silly. No,
you mentioned you were one of the founders of Neshoba?
Yeah, it was the fact that the Brooks School went from 3-year-olds through the third grade, and then the boys could go on to Penn. There was no private education for the girls. And a group of parents and some of us teachers felt very strongly that there should be a link to the girls before Concord Academy or wherever they went.
Excuse me, I don't want to interrupt, but Concord Academy originally had the grades from kindergarten on.
Yeah.
Then they dropped them.
Oh, yes.
And that's when Neshoba came in?
They dropped a bit at a time. And Brooks took over some, and Penn took over some, but it was mostly girls at that time. And so it took 5 years to get off the ground. Mrs. Brooks and Roger Penn were all behind it, and Pat Morton was very active with it. And we finally got enough enthusiasm to get the school started. It was called the Concord Country Day School. Is that what it was called? I think so.
I don't remember. I thought it started out to be... didn't it start out to be Brooks?
This was from Brooks on.
I know it, but it wasn't...
The Neshoba Country Day School was first housed in what is now... The Concord Academy loaned us the ground floor, to start the school. We started with about 25 people. And,
in Lee House?
That's the one that was the tavern. The first
Wheeler.
Yes. Wheeler. Then we hired a Concord citizen, Don Gillespie, as an architect. We found the land, we looked all over town for the land, and finally found the land out there on Strawberry Hill Road. And Don drew up a very modern plan with enough land so that it could be expanded, thank goodness, because now from 25 students, it's 400 something. No, not that much. Well, I haven't the figures exactly. But it's a thriving thing. And then finally,
there's boys and girls, is that correct?
Yeah, boys and girls. And then Brooks and Neshoba under Gene Travis
That's great. It's wonderful that you and your family were part of both.
Yes, we were. Yeah.
Very nice. Thank you.
Thank you.